You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Roar! Growl!
What?
I'm just hinting at the at our episode.
That went over my head, as most things do.
Whatever you're gonna say is gonna be so much better than what I was gonna say.
I was just gonna say how excited I am. I was already saying this to you, how excited I am to be recording this episode. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's because we're recording in daylight for once that I have a little more pep in my step. Or
where is the sun? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. Also, today, not when you listen to this, but today, Joe Biden's being inaugurated.
That is probably one reason why I have a lot of extra pep in my step, too.
Do you know what? I haven't been watching or reading anything because I almost feel like I don't want to jinx it. Like, I just want it to happen, and then I want to wake up tomorrow and read about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to approach it. I definitely had it playing while I was working, and it was very distracting. But
I heard Michelle was wearing an incredible coat.
She was wearing an incredible outfit.
That's the only thing I saw.
And her hair was just, like, gorgeous. And I saw a funny tweet that was, like, you know, the memes that are, like, how it started, how it's going.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And so it was like how it started, and it was Michelle Obama at Trump's inauguration, and she
like holding the gift or whatever.
Well, no, she had her hair like back in just like a ponytail. And was like giving like a side eye, and then it was like how it's going, and it was Michelle Obama with like this gorgeous voluminous hair like walking into the inauguration today, and it was like
Oscar's red carpet.
Exactly, that's what she looked like, whereas like the other one she was like, I'm not getting dressed up for this.
Someone described her coat as oxblood, so I'm really excited to see pictures.
I would say that it's probably oxblood, and she's wearing this like red, gorgeous like gold belt buckle, like with this oxblood outfit. Like, she just looked really, really good. Yeah,
I love that. I love also she can really do like get you someone who can do both or whatever. Like, she can do like rowing in that canoe, like really intensely, which I love, honestly. And then she can also do like glamorous oxblood.
She really can.
That's a rare quality.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
Yeah, you know, tempeh cannot do that. I still hate tempeh.
You haven't tried it again, no?
No, I haven't.
Well, if you guys remember Tarek's tempeh,
if anyone out there grows tempeh,
you should give Tarek some tips on how to prepare tempeh.
Yeah, absolutely. What I do want to ask you is, Hannah, do you have a BS of the week?
Funny that you ask. I just happened to have something in my back pocket that I, want to talk about.
Yeah,
didn't plan this at all.
Okay,
but I, you know what I want to talk about this week in the BS of the week? It's again. Mm-hmm. So I'm coming back at you guys again this week with like. It's more of a concept or like a way of approaching things than it is a specific product or a specific diet plan that I want to talk about. Or I don't know if I even said that right, but let's just get into it. So what I want to talk about is the demonization, I think you're going to like this, of processed foods.
I have so much to say. Okay.
Okay. Well, it's my BS of the week. So sit down. Sit back. No, I'm just kidding. I am welcoming your input. But
part of it is I'm obsessed with your nails. But let's not talk about that right now. Keep going. I just noticed
that. Thank
you. Keep going.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Let's reel it in here. Yeah. As I was preparing for last week's episode, or mm-hmm. right now it's this week. Anyways, confusing. Last week's episode yeah. where we talked about the Mayer method and the Golo for Life diet. When I was scrolling right. through both of those things, I noticed that both of them mentioned cutting out or like, you know, quote, no processed foods. Like that was
sure.
that was kind of a, you know, a component of both of those diets. And mm-hmm. today I want to use this BS of the Week to talk about why we shouldn't be demonizing processed foods and kind of distinguish between processed foods and ultra processed foods. Because I think
interesting. Okay.
I'm not sure that a lot of people out there know the difference.
I don't know if I can draw a hard line right now, honestly.
Okay. So I'm looking forward to learning. Let me give you some definitions. So yeah. the definition of a processed food, or what food processing is it's the transformation of agricultural products into food, or of one form of food into other forms. Does that make
sure.
sense?
Okay.
So food yeah. processing includes many forms, from like grinding grain to make flour, or, you know, home cooking, what you would do to transform.
I was like, going to say, just like cooking something
yeah, cooking
at home
something
is
a form of processing, or using, you know, things like industrial methods to make convenience foods or like packaged products and whatnot. And then another definition is that a processed food is a food item that has had a series of mechanical or chemical operations performed on it to change it or preserve it.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. So that's basically food processing. Those are two yeah. examples or definitions of
what... A pickle is a processed cucumber.
Totally. Exactly.
Yeah.
But we need to like step back because I think there's this, like I said, this demonization of processed foods in diet culture or in our society. You know, you always hear influencers or people saying that I don't eat processed foods, or
all I did was I cut out processed
foods. Yeah, exactly.
Foods.
the key to my success was just cutting
out processed
foods. I didn't
do anything
else. Right, exactly. Yeah. But these mechanical or chemical operations that are being applied to food are not all bad. Like you said, a pickle is like a processed cucumber in a way. It's sure. it's an example. Mm-hmm. So like, let's just think about, how do you think we get baby carrots? How do you think we get shelled pistachios? You know, the ones that come that are already, they have the shell off of them already.
Yeah.
Or pitted dates. Mm-hmm. What about frozen fruits and vegetables or canned legumes, like canned beans mm-hmm. and lentils, or bread, like grains, you know, hummus, right. all of those things have been processed. But mm-hmm. they're still like nutritious, healthy foods.
Totally.
So, yeah, you know, when someone says to me, like, I don't eat processed food, or that's what they claim was, you know, their success, mm-hmm. it was like, okay, so you literally...
Are you a raw vegan?
Right, exactly.
Like me,
like,
for 9 months?
You yeah. just ate raw fruits and vegetables from...
We need a t-shirt that says raw vegan for 9 months.
Along with Big Cashew.
A Big Cashew, yeah.
yeah. These are going to be on our merch. But... Yeah, and like we already said, like cooking could, you know, if we want to get technical, could be a form of processing too. So, yeah, it irks me when people or practitioners or influencers or diet companies say, like, you shouldn't eat processed foods or I don't eat processed foods. Because, yeah, it's like, okay, so you really just eat raw fruits and vegetables that you picked from the ground all day? Like, that's could, because essentially, if you don't eat any processed
right.
food, that's what you would be doing. So... Yeah, most foods at a grocery store have been processed to some extent in order to get it from wherever it was harvested to the store in the package or on the shelf or whatever.
And like you're saying, even like baby carrots, even though they're in the produce aisle, the carrots have been peeled and cut, etc.
Yep,
therefore,
exactly.
there was some sort of mechanical process involved.
Yeah, and same with frozen fruits and vegetables. Like they've been... literally for like to preserve it, we're freezing it, we're canned
right.
products,
or anything that's tinned
yeah, yeah yeah we're that's a way of we have to process it in order to preserve it. So mm-hmm. I want to differentiate a little bit, so now we'll get into ultra processed foods because that's another story. So I just
okay.
I guess this BS of the week, it's a little bit of debunking, you know, it's kind of like you do eat processed foods even if you're claiming that you don't, but it's also
sure.
kind of distinguishing the difference between processed and ultra processed.
Sure.
So an ultra processed food is one that has been significantly changed from its original state likely with salt, sugar, fat, other additives, preservatives, or artificial colors added. So yeah, I agree that, you know, most ultra processed foods, when we consume them in excess, can contribute to probably negative health outcomes or the development of more unfavorable outcomes.
Sure.
Because they tend to be higher in things like added sugar or sodium or saturated or trans fats or artificial flavors and colors, etc. And then they also tend to be lower in things like the essential vitamins and minerals that we need for our health. So of course, if we start to replace ultra processed foods with other more nutritious foods, that's where we would run into issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. My point is that there's a difference between processed and ultra processed. And if you're working or claiming to have expertise in like the food or diet industry, or even you're like an influencer in the wellness industry, you should probably try and know the difference between mm-hmm. the two and stop claiming or telling other people not to eat processed foods, because
making a smoothie is
processing, blending something together, literally a food processor that you can use as a home, like kitchen appliance. You're processing mm-hmm. whatever you're putting in there. So that gives you like that pesto you made homemade is a processed food.
It's a label that people are misusing. And also at the same time, it ends up demonizing a bunch of foods.
It does. Yeah. So anyways, that's really all I have for the BS of the week is...
Gorgeous.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
No, that was great. I definitely don't think people think about that. So at least I didn't. In my mind, the first thing that I thought of was like Kraft singles, like cheese.
Right, like processed cheese.
Yeah.
But like, all cheese is processed, really, if you think about it.
That's a good point. Exactly. Yeah. That's a great point. But also like whatever cheese slices are fine. Like you're not going to... It's not going to ruin your life if you have a cheese slice here and there.
No, exactly. If it's something that you're, you know, if you're eating, if your diet is being made up of cheese slices, you know, that's a, you know, one of the food groups that you eat or like a major food that you eat, you know, then you may want to consider.
You're probably consuming a lot of sodium.
Eating it less often.
Other things.
Yeah, yeah.
They probably don't need to. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's a really wonderful BS of the week and very BS-y. A lot of people, it's a very buzzy buzzword. It's a very popular buzzword.
Yeah. It is. Processed foods. It's very popular. And yeah, even amongst like healthcare professionals, I think sometimes they don't even get it right, you know? So this is just to put it out there that processed foods are actually all around us in the grocery store, even in like the health food section or in... the produce section, there's probably a lot of processed
foods.
This
is great. I mean, one of the reasons that we like doing this is, I mean, you end up teaching me a lot through this too, is not just debunking things, but also defining things, because nutrition literacy is something that we don't often think about.
Yeah.
And that we don't really props to school teachers. This is not on them at all, but like what we get in school isn't enough for everybody. Maybe it is for some people, but it's not enough for everybody.
Yeah, I agree. All right. Well, that's the BS of the week, you guys. Don't forget, if you ever have something that you've come across that you think is a little bit sketchy or might be misinformation or pseudoscience, send it to us, because we would love to talk about it in the BS of the week.
Absolutely. And also just send us a DM for whatever. We've been getting a few over the past couple of weeks, and it's been really nice talking and chatting to people.
Yeah.
And not to brag, but our listeners are really cool, so we enjoy meeting you. People who listen to our podcast tend to be people who like do cool things themselves, I find.
I agree.
Related to food, related to nutrition. So yeah, it's fun to meet you and fun to learn about what you do. So that's really exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
On another note, on another foot, on another paw, on another claw, out in the wilderness, in the forest, people running around the bushes, diving into rivers, catching raw salmon with their big teeth, climbing up trees, scaring hikers. What did all these things remind you of, Hannah?
They remind me of
raccoons.
No, not raccoons.
Okay.
Rabbits, bigger than raccoons.
Larger. Giant rabbits. Okay.
I'm thinking about bears, actually.
I'm thinking about bears, too. I'm especially thinking about the incredible phenomena of eat like a bear.
I literally...
Which is why I was roaring at the beginning of the episode.
I can't believe that this is a thing, but I'm so excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm very excited to talk about it, too. There's some things that maybe we haven't covered before within the Eat Like a Bear diet. Also, if you've heard of Eat Like a Bear, please tell us. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. It seems to be this very, I wouldn't say small community, but it's a niche community, maybe. It's a community that has co-opted a bit of low-carb eating, ketogenic eating, and has also co-opted a bit of the intermittent fasting lifestyle.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the basic definition of the diet. There's a couple other like little intricacies here and there. It is a diet that involves, you know, certain elimination of, including maybe of like ultra processed foods, like Hannah, you were telling us in the BS of the week. And but the biggest part of it, as we'll continue to discuss, is just generally this low carb eating and also intermittent fasting in kind of a specific way, in maybe that we haven't discussed before.
Yeah, it's interesting to see all of those things like grouped into one. I don't know actually if I've seen a lot of people online doing, and maybe this is just because I live in like an anti-diet bubble.
Yeah,
I haven't really seen like the combo of keto or low carb and intermittent fasting together. Yeah. You know what I have seen is vegan keto.
Okay.
Which?
What are they eating?
I don't know. I don't know because
tofu, just tofu.
But what we talked about in the keto episode is that you also, if you want to be in ketosis, and maybe they're doing vegan keto and not really reaching ketosis, but you also have to make sure that you're eating a limited amount of protein as well, because protein, your body will convert that into glucose enough of it, right? So you can't just eat tofu all day because that's a good source of protein. So I literally don't know what you would eat on vegan keto. But anyways, that's besides the
point. Okay. Sounds interesting. A lot of this sounds very interesting. Especially interesting because it's coming from Dr. Amanda Rose.
Yeah. Can you tell us about where this originated, please? Because I think that's one of the best parts of it.
Dr. Amanda Rose, no disrespect to you. Everyone's on their own journey. What I don't like is maybe the glorification of weight loss and the subsequent like mass promotion of it through, I would say, rarely backed up claims, if at all. So Dr. Amanda Rose is a PhD. Interesting, people are listening. Oh, maybe a PhD in food science, maybe a PhD in nutrition, maybe an RD PhD, maybe an MD PhD. If someone in the clinical sphere, surely... maybe beyond healthcare, someone specifically working with patients, probably maybe around eating disorders, who knows, something like that, you would think. But even a PhD in biology at the very least,
right?
Human nutrition,
yeah,
kinesiology,
something human related where you'd have that understanding.
Yeah, exactly. Amanda Rose is a PhD in political science. Which, honestly, congratulations. I have friends doing PhDs in political science, and they work very hard. Some of them work in political science in healthcare.
Cool.
Not clinically, but the political science of, you know, policy, law in healthcare, things like that. Very important work. Amanda Rose did no such thing. Incredible. She says, her PhD has made her really good at case analysis. I would probably agree with that. Sure, you're probably learning about how to investigate cases really well, find evidence. Why did none of that make it to the website? None of that expertise really made it to the website,
no.
reference-wise, citation-wise. That's just a question I'm going to throw out there. So Dr. Rose claims that eating like a bear will help you lose weight. There's almost little to no mention of establishing a healthy lifestyle. I would say that we're very motivated to just talk on the website. It's all weight loss.
Yeah.
This is not a wellness culture thing so much as it is. It's just diet culture.
It's a weight loss diet.
Unabashedly, let's lose weight and fast.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Is what I've seen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No. I was just going to say as well, I found the website, and you guys should check it out just for, I don't know, entertainment purposes. But
sure.
I found it really difficult to, like, maybe I didn't look hard enough, but...
I don't think she really described
what a bear eats. Like, does she know what a bear,
so,
you know?
Here's the thing. Yeah, exactly. So part of it, I think, is this whole... So she talks a little bit about foraging herself.
Yep.
So, sure, bears forage.
Yep.
They don't go to the grocery store, usually. One thing she does discuss, I'm losing my mind. One thing she discusses is bear hibernation. So bears, she says, after they eat, they hibernate to starve off their fat. So that was her inspiration. Interesting use of words. And also interesting way to pull inspiration.
Not problematic whatsoever.
So she kind of compares this to intermittent fasting.
Sure. So this
several month hibernation, which, by the way, bears sometimes wake up during hibernation very frequently and will have like a meal here and there, do certain things. They don't rarely will animals totally sleep for the entire duration of like a whole season hibernation. Some animals do. Not all.
Okay.
So she's talking about how, so she's blending kind of this foraging. So you would kind of allude or surmise that that's like, quote, natural foods, you know, unprocessed foods. And also this kind of intermittent fasting thing. So this is an evolutionary biology perspective that I would say a political scientist usually isn't familiar with.
Mm-mm.
I'm going to throw that out there. Poli sci, people absolutely feel free to shred me in any comments. But I would say, and I'm not saying I'm an evolutionary biologist. No, not at all. But what I'm saying is it's an interesting perspective for a political scientist to take. So it's kind of alluding to the idea, which is very similar to the whole keto and intermittent fasting thing, that we've evolved to eat a certain way. Right, in order to be at a certain, quote, peak physical condition. And also, like, mental condition or whatever. So, another example of, like, evolutionary biology is, so we raise our eyebrows when we recognize people. So, like, you see someone, you go, oh, hey. And you raise your eyebrows. One idea is, like, it opens up the eye a little bit more so you can get as much visual information as possible. It's called an eyebrow flash, and it's found across most, if not all, cultures around the world. So it's something that evolutionary biologists have said, oh, like, this must be something we've evolved to do. We recognize someone, and we want to show them our intent to react with them. So we do an eyebrow flash. Okay, sure, interesting. I'm not an evolutionary biologist, but this is one theory. So the people have co-opted this kind of same framework for keto and for intermittent fasting being, and we've talked about a little bit about this before, like whole caveman diet sort of thing. Like, let's eat like our ancestors did. Like, you know, we're meant to eat raw meat and only eat like once every 9 months or whatever, like when there's food, no carbs. Like, we didn't have bread back then, so we shouldn't be eating like that, et cetera. So this is kind of the same framework.
Yeah.
None of this is backed up at all anywhere on the website, anywhere in the many pages of the website. There's some very cool 30-second clickbaity videos of how to lose weight fast. The website, I don't know if... do you remember when you were in high school and you had you had to write an essay for an exam. And you kind of, you, and it would say, like, write about three ways that, you know, World War II was, like, three reasons for why World War II was, like, what started or something. And you knew the first two reasons, but you couldn't really think of a third one. Mm-hmm. So you kind of just wrote something, you know, you filled in a bunch of words, wrote a couple paragraphs kind of about nothing.
Sure, totally.
That was kind of the whole website, was that, like, yes. Third idea.
Okay, so that's what I wanted to mention is that, and I'm sure you noticed this because you're bringing it up, but the whole website was like, she was just talking in circles about this amazing weight loss that she experienced that now other people are experiencing, and, you know, she discovered it, and, but she never really tells you what exactly it is. Or,
it's a masterclass in just word vomit.
Yeah, kind of the whole website is her word vomiting about her weight loss. And I want to, I don't know if, so I, in order to get a little more information, I actually signed up for her three-day plan.
Oh, the challenge. Yeah.
The three-day Eat Like a Bear challenge, so I could get a little information about what it actually is. So,
anything stand out to you in that, I wonder?
So did you see it?
I did, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So before we get into that, I just want to back up a little bit and give you guys a little more background on... what's her name again? Dr. Rose.
Yeah.
And so she... This diet, she claims, started... She says she lost... What was it? 140 pounds?
120?
Something like that. Yeah. She lost half of her body weight. I think she was...
She has a great photo where she's carrying her, I'm assuming, like, 13-year-old son on her back saying, I lost a whole child. It's like a bit very...
Oh, God.
Like, bad pictures. Like, things you shouldn't be saying or taking pictures of and posting online.
So, Amanda Rose, she says that she was on the... list for bariatric surgery. You know, she was carrying a lot of weight, and she had been put on a list for bariatric surgery. And for those who don't know, a lot of times before you actually have the surgery, you're put on a weight loss plan, or you're asked to lose some weight before you even get the surgery. And so she was setting out to lose weight in order to have her bariatric surgery. And she, you know, I guess decided that this was what she was going to try to. She says that, you know, she wanted to lose the weight. She wanted to be able to go out and hike and forage and, you know, do those things because she had an interest in them. I don't know exactly where she lives, but it seems like she lives somewhere where there's a lot of hiking, somewhere in California. Yeah. And anyway, so I think that's a positive. It came from this internal motivation that, you know, she wanted to be able to hike with her kids and whatnot, which is great. And, but basically this whole diet is, it's just another one of those, this worked for me, so it's going to work for you. You know, why doesn't everyone else on the internet try it? And it's gotten so far that now she has, or she is, I don't know, she came out with a book recently about
her
eating plan, about her diet. She's been interviewed on some, you know, big channels and
magazines.
Gotten a lot of attention, magazines, And... yeah, so I signed up for the 3-day Eat Like a Bear challenge because on the website there is virtually no information about what the actual plan consists of. Yeah, she really wants to get your email address and get you to sign up so you can figure out what the heck it actually is. So I did that. And I'm going to bring it up right here just so I can make sure I have all the right information.
And people, feel free to, while you're listening to this, go to the Instagram page. It's also another masterclass in diet culture because it's all before and after photos.
Yeah. Oh, great. So Eat Like a Bear, 3-day challenge, day one test meal. And this is like the, I don't know the right word for this. It's like,
she wants to give people a taste for what eating like a bear is like.
Right. But her,
if you can do the 3 days, she says you can do this like forever or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the keys of Eat Like a Bear, because I'm sure so many bears are out there eating this, is
absolutely
the ridiculously big salad.
Oh, yeah.
That is, like, the pinnacle.
She has a whole book called The Ridiculously Big
Salad. This is the
big
pinnacle of Eat Like a Bear, the ridiculously big mm-hmm. salad. So she, you know, talks about how it's essentially volume eating, right? Like, she puts multiple hearts of romaine lettuce into a
low
giant
density
bowl.
Calorie.
Yeah, yeah, they're not
low calorie density.
Exactly. Yeah.
Volume eating.
And she adds some other vegetables, maybe some onion, tomato, cucumber, and then a big, makes a big, portion of dressing, mixes it all up, and that is her meal. Oh yeah. And add a protein.
Keto dressing.
You gotta add a protein.
As she says.
Yes. A keto dressing and a protein, whatever your protein of choice is. And that is like the pinnacle of Eat Like a Bear, is the ridiculously big salad. The next mm-hmm. one on day two is cooked vegetables, essentially. It's basically sauteing vegetables yeah. and a protein. There's really nothing big to it. It's cauliflower. That's it. Cauliflower. Cauliflower and a protein and some cheese. Very keto-esque. And then day three, repeat day one. So another ridiculously big salad. And that is all you eat every day.
Do you think she got to day three and she was like, I can't come up with anything?
Right. She's like, back to the start. So, so that's kind of where the combination of, low carb and intermittent fasting comes in. You eat that one meal a day and it's a...
In 1 hour, she stresses.
You get an hour to eat that one meal, one hour window, and it's a low carb meal. It's a, lots of vegetables, protein, essentially
barely any
no
calories.
Carbs. Yeah. Very low calorie. And that's the gist of Eat Like a Bear. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very vague. It's on, on the website or in some of her videos, she says about the 3-day challenge, some people ask me what I should be drinking or if I should have another meal if I'm hungry. And she just basically says, I'm not going to tell you what to do. Like, she's like, I'm not the person to tell you yes or no, or you can't
she's
do this, or you
person.
Should do this. She's just not her. It's not her vibe. And so it's just ambiguous. But, if you want to have her success, you know, she only ate one meal a day and it was this ridiculously big salad. Or I don't know if that's trademarked.
I don't know.
Her cauliflower skillet.
I'm not going to use it, so it's fine.
So one thing that I did find interesting, and this is the last thing I'm going to say, and then you can take it away again. But I thought this was interesting on her website, this quote from her site. I'm going to read it off. So she says, if you've found this page trying to contact me with a business partnership, I do not promote products. There was no product that I needed to lose weight. Family and friends are using no products. There's a trend among weight loss gurus to launch a food or supplement product line. Why? The perimeter of the grocery store, the farmer's market, our gardens, and our forests offer everything we need. As I wake up to the world of before and after weight loss stories, a world I have completely ignored until very recently, and see what people are doing with their own success, I have decided that I will not trade hiking and foraging for any of these things. 1, bottling and selling a supplement. 2, packaging a food. 3, modeling clothes on Instagram. Sorry, boys. Snort.
She does that all over her website.
Yeah. I thought that was funny because at first I was like, okay, I appreciate that. She's not trying to make money, I guess, or get a brand deal or turn her success into supplements. But at the same time, it's just, this is kind of one of the diet culture problems that we have, is that we just rely on people who have had an experience themselves. So they've lost some weight. And we just think that we can almost copy and paste exactly what they did onto what we did, or what we're going to do. Sorry. So I think that's problematic because we just almost blindly follow people who have no clue if what they're doing will be healthful for other people, or they just, think this worked for me, so I'm going to share my story and share it with everyone else and write books about it and whatnot, which is, I don't know. I think there's a list of reasons why that's problematic.
Well, and it's such a red flag too. I mean, you make a great point, and it's such a red flag that, this diet that she's recommending, which she offers you flexibility, whatever, you can do whatever you want. She said it's just calorie restriction. I mean, in my mind, It's simply calorie, and that's why people are losing weight on this diet. That's why she lost a lot of weight, is because she's calorie restricting. And if anybody wants proof of like the kind of whether or not there's disordered aspects to this diet, I have another quote. There's a lot of gems in this site, and really bad gems that I don't want to steal. Leave that treasure chest alone. She says, first, when I'm eating one meal a day, I eat a very big meal, her ridiculously big salad, trademark. As I describe in the video, I usually eat a meal with a very large salad component, and that salad, especially coleslaw, will digest for hours. Okay. I actually feel completely stuffed for a few hours after the meal, and particularly on the cabbage days, I don't feel hungry even hours later at bedtime. A little disordered there. However, I usually do get a bit hungry by bedtime, and I've just learned to not pay attention to it. I go to sleep, and I wake up feeling less hungry. As morning hunger creeps in, I'm just a couple of hours from my meal, so I don't find it to be a big deal. So you're starving yourself. Yeah, I mean, like, you're forcing yourself to not eat.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is.
To ignore hunger, and then you're eating probably, I'm thinking of a salad with a large protein is, I don't know, 500 calories maybe at most.
I mean, you probably could get, it depends on how much, like what you're using in your, you know, in your dressings or things like that. I mean, on her 3-day challenge, she calls for a quarter cup of mayo and then a quarter cup of Greek yogurt in the dressing. I mean, so that would add up a little bit, but you're right. The vegetables, though, aren't really going to give you anything. You know,
it's still very low.
I think max, yeah, you might get like 1,000 calories out of it. Maybe
if you get 1,000, yeah.
Yeah, like you'd be, that's a really freaking big salad.
You're pushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I really don't like that. I obviously do whatever you want, whatever, but I don't think it's good to publicly promote this stuff that's going to be, as we've talked about in many, many episodes, like mentally or physically damaging to people.
Mm-hmm.
And so she does this another amazing example of this, which a PhD should never do, more claims that are not backed up. Here's another quote. One reason your hunger will be less than you imagine is because as you reduce your eating window through intermittent fasting, your hormones will become better regulated. No citation. What does that even mean?
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, I think she's, I watched a video, I don't know, she was interviewed by someone, I forget. And she was talking about insulin and how, and you know, right. Reducing insulin sensitivity and whatnot. And it made a little bit of sense, but it didn't make a lot of sense. You know, there are a lot of things that contribute to insulin resistance. It's not just eating several times a day. There are several contributors to insulin resistance and developing that. And her main like rationale was we get insulin resistant or
to not eat. Yeah.
Well, no, she said like the reason we all develop insulin resistance as we age is because we eat so often throughout the day. And that's not true. You know, you know,
to eat less.
Exactly. Yeah. Her answer to that, to stop spiking insulin, which she claimed in that interview, was insulin makes us fat. That's what she said. She was just like, that's what makes you fat.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
Her reasoning behind the whole diet is like to stop spiking your insulin levels, which is not, no, it's just, yeah.
I mean, she's clearly an expert in something, but she's not an export in nutrition. That is also very clear.
It's very, very so clear.
So she says your hormones will become better regulated, including the hormone that's responsible for hunger pangs. Did you realize that those feelings of hunger and are not some sort of real starvation hunger? A hormone gets triggered to tell you that you're hungry, and sometimes that stupid hormone can drive us completely insane. End quote. So she says, that feeling of wanting to eat your arm off, it's your out-of-control hunger hormone. Guess what helps that feeling go away? Intermittent fasting. Anyway, so she says all this. So we've previously talked about previously talked about intermittent fasting. Intermittent. And we've previously talked a little bit about hunger and satiety hormones. So it's just a little refresher. Intermittent fasting studies show no better sustainability of the diet as compared to traditional calorie restriction. They often are calorie restricted diets just because of the nature of eating it during less amounts of time during the day. Ultimately, they make no difference on long-term weight loss, as in people usually gain it back. And also, we've talked about how it's kind of difficult to study because there's so much variation, et cetera. There's a lot of moving parts to studying diets like intermittent fasting. So there's actually few papers that discuss the specific claim she's making, that intermittent fasting will, quote, better regulate your hunger hormones. So aside from insulin, obviously a hormone very closely tied to eating, nutrition, there's also ghrelin and leptin, the main characters or the protagonists of hunger and satiety.
Yep.
Hormones. And few papers actually address the claim that she's making. There is a subset of papers, and we've also talked about this a little bit before, but haven't actually dug into a study that looks at people who are observing Ramadan, the Islamic holy month, where people fast during the day and eat after sunset. So even though there are variables here, and it's not a perfect way to examine intermittent fasting clinically, it is an opportunity to study it in one way. Maybe not completely generalizable, but, you know, here it is. I did find, so there's only a few studies, so the science is not completely fleshed out in this regard at all. But I did find a study that had very low numbers, so take this with a grain of salt, but it's literally one of the only pieces of peer-reviewed scientific evidence that there are about the claim that she's making, which she doesn't even cite. So this paper called Diurnal Intermittent Fasting During Ramadan, The Effects of Leptin and Ghrelin, the effects on leptin and ghrelin levels. And obviously we'll put this in the notes. So what they had here was they had 8 healthy male volunteers, barely anybody. They were kind of youngish, high 20s years of age. And they went into the clinic 4 different times, I think. So at first it was before fasting, before Ramadan started. And then they came back in again before Ramadan started, but they were fasting for 1 week, even though it wasn't Ramadan. And then they came back 1 week before Ramadan when they weren't fasting again. And then they came back the 4th time during the 2nd week of Ramadan while fasting. So it was like a no fasting, just like complete baseline. Then they fasted for 1 week, even though it wasn't Ramadan. So they hadn't been fasting before. And then they came back again. They weren't fasting before Ramadan, and they had fasted previously. And then 2 weeks into Ramadan. So I guess they had like a bunch of things to compare there. They were comparing the effect of like not fasting on your leptin and ghrelin levels and the effect of fasting on them. Anyway, go on. So leptin is a satiety hormone. So when it's released, it decreases our motivation for hunger. And ghrelin is a hunger promoting hormone that act in very complicated ways. I think we've maybe touched on a little bit.
We have.
So Dr. Rose is basically saying ghrelin signaling will go down with intermittent fasting is one way that you could interpret what she's saying about how intermittent fasting control your hunger pangs or your hunger hormone. So let's see what the science, albeit very limited, I'll say, says. So during the baseline fasting, so before Ramadan, there were significant reductions in leptin concentrations in the blood plasma. And during Ramadan, there was also a significant reduction in the same thing, in the leptin levels in the blood plasma. So there was decreased leptin, which means that so leptin is a satiety hormone. So it means that people were hungrier.
Yeah.
And not a huge surprise to me because people have been fasting.
You're fasting.
There was no significant difference in plasma levels of ghrelin at all in any of the time points that they were studying at all. So there was no change in the ghrelin signaling, even though people had been basically doing OMAD and basically fasting one meal a day and basically, you know, going through intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. So there's currently no evidence out there to say that, to agree with what she's saying at all. And in fact, people were hungrier rather than less hungry, which actually makes complete sense if you think about it, just like logically,
sure.
Which she was not doing.
Yeah.
There have been a few other studies, but they haven't said anything vastly different. And then she says this kind of like scary, even more disordered thing, I'd say. So she says, a second important psychological factor for me is that the diet is so darn successful. There's nothing like seeing the scale. I know I'm doing a performance here, but who knows how she was saying.
Yeah.
But there's nothing like seeing the scale go down, down, down to keep you on track. I've been at parties, on vacations, traveling, and more, and I've stayed on track through it all. There's apparently not much that will woo me off track at this point. A little bit of hunger certainly won't. Isn't that awful?
That is the worst thing I've ever heard? Problematic. You guys, that is
so
not
problematic.
A healthy thing. Like,
no.
When I hear someone say that vacation, a party, like none of that will throw me off track because I'm so dedicated to the number on the scale going down, that to mm-hmm. me is like ding, 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 eating disorder.
Yeah.
Like that.
It's a huge red flag.
Yeah, yeah, huge red flag.
So, and we know about these kinds of things is that they're not sustainable. They're actually bad for your health if you somehow find yourself sustaining these behaviors.
Yeah.
They're not good for you.
Yeah.
And whether that's your physical or mental health, which I think both are very important. So it's and what another like terrible thing she also says, just to clarify, during my initial weight loss, my exercise routine has been fairly minimal. The weight loss is due to eating and fasting program rather than exercise. Or you could read that as the weight loss is due to calorie restriction and I'm forcing myself not to eat even though I'm hungry, which she said mm-hmm. elsewhere on the site.
Yeah.
So I really don't like it, and not only because it's totally like problematic the way that she's talking about all this, but also because there's no science to support what she's saying at all. The reason that people are losing weight is not because you're better regulating your hormones at all. It's because you're calorie restricting.
Yeah,
that's what you're doing.
Oh, yeah.
You're calorie
yeah.
restricting.
It's just a way. It's a like intermittent fasting. It's just another way to cut down on the amount of calories that you're taking in because you're closing the window yeah. on the opportunities to eat.
She has this quote cheat sheet that she has where she color codes different foods, and mm-hmm. of course she has red foods that you should absolutely cut out, which includes bread, pasta, potatoes, etc. Breakfast cereal. The things that can be like really important staples in people's diets. Mm-hmm. Anyway, suffice to say, I don't like this. And it makes me mad that she's using her PhD to sell
yeah.
a product,
yeah.
which is her book. She is selling stuff and she does sell ebooks as well, which she says have more advanced ideas about how to implement this diet.
Yeah.
And I don't like that at all. I don't like it one bit. And there's a bit of like high horse sort of situation where she says she's not like those other diets. But in fact, this very much is like every other diet out there in that it's calorie restricted and that there's some sort of motivation to get people to buy stuff.
Yeah. And I, you know what? I really don't, there's a lot of things I don't like, but I don't like how, yeah, it's like, I did this so you can too. And
yeah.
No, like not everyone can do this or not like so sure Dr. Rose has found a way to somehow maintain this way of eating, but that doesn't mean that other people can just because she did. Like it's and we know this from
and it definitely doesn't mean that she's doing the quote scientific stuff that she says
no,
is happening
no,
to her body.
No, exactly. And so people would see, oh, she lost half of her body weight or whatever it was. I need to do that too. I'm going to try it. And then if they, you know, if it doesn't work for them, then they, it just perpetuates this cycle of like guilt and dieting and not dieting. If you can't, you know, the yo-yo dieting cycle, if you can't maintain it, and we talked about this in the last episode, so I won't, you know, harp on it too much, but there's that, and yeah, like just this low carb, intermittent fasting, these things are so hard to stick to. And so restrictive. And it's just to me, I mean, it sounds like Dr. Rose lives in the middle of the woods and she goes hiking and forages and whatever she says on her website, but other people like live different lives. And to me, it just doesn't sound like something that's gonna promote any sort of quality of life or balance. You can't go, like she said, like you can't go to parties, you can't go on vacation, you can't enjoy those things while you're on this diet because you're only eating one meal a day and it has to be a ridiculously big salad with very specific like criteria. And
to just spend hours of your day trying to talk yourself out of eating is not a pleasurable way to live.
No, and it's not healthy.
No.
Yeah. So big thumbs down.
That was, thumbs D. I don't like it. It just makes me mad when people abuse their, like, whatever little power you get when you have an advanced degree and force people to think that you're some sort of expert.
Yeah, like that was annoying too. All of her, like, she has a YouTube channel and all of her videos and all of, like, everything, her book and everything. It's like, Amanda Rose, PhD, like, eat like a bear, yeah, weight loss.
And I'm not saying I'm an expert, but at least I'm citing my sources. Cite some of your sources.
Right, right, exactly. And it's, I don't know, it's misleading. People see that PhD and they go, oh, well, she must know something about nutrition.
Yeah. No.
But it doesn't tell you what her PhD is in or what, you know, all that stuff, unless you do some real digging on the website. So.
And it also sucks because one of her main things is she's targeting older women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I don't know, taking advantage of a population that's already getting so much, like not getting any slack from the world at all. Like, older women are constantly being targeted by whatever products to quote rejuvenate themselves, make themselves look younger, feel younger, etc. So this is just another, like, I don't know, another thing that, like, people have to contend with is like, oh, well, okay, now this is a diet specifically for older women, so maybe I should be on
mm-hmm,
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot wrong with it. Yeah.
I do have a little, like, fun thing kind of related to this. Okay. So I was just kind of thinking about evolutionary psychology, evolutionary biology, and I was just, like, kind of going down a rabbit hole. I'm not going to spend too much time on this, just a few minutes. I found this interesting little topic here. There's an initial paper published in 2017, in a pretty good journal, Proceedings of National Academic Sciences. And they were talking, that it was titled Impact of Nutrition on Social Decision Making. Interesting. So they basically looked at different kinds of macronutrient makeup of diets and how it influenced people's behavior in what's called an ultimatum game. So you're given different choices, like, throughout this game, and you pick different choices, and you know there's certain consequences with different choices. So the way that you decide things, kind of, you can label people as, like, dominant or submissive, or, like, nice or mean, like, depending on the way that they make their decisions.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm not an expert in this. Obviously, anyone who's a psychologist and does the ultimatum game with in a clinical setting is probably rolling their eyes. Anyway. So what they found was that eating, and this is, like, one paper. I'm not saying this is, like, written in stone or whatever, but it was interesting. Eating high-protein, low-carb breakfasts made people more likely to be taken advantage of. So they were more appeasing in the ultimatum game, and they were more likely to choose, make decisions that would end up not in their favor.
Hmm.
You know, so they would make decisions that were less favorable to them. So these were people who were eating high-protein, low-carb breakfasts. People who were eating higher carbohydrate than protein breakfasts were more likely to make decisions that were more favorable to them. Interesting. Anyway, and again, like, this is one paper, like, I would say a theoretical area. Evolutionary psychology, evolutionary biology really depends a lot on us theorizing backwards,
right?
Which can sometimes be interesting and helpful, but in a lot of cases, I think it's definitely in the hypothesis stage, I'll say. Because theories are real things. Theory of gravity.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, like, a real thing. Totally. So theory is a real thing. But anyway, this is, like, a hypothesis stage theory sometimes. So there's no direct evidence for how this works. But one thing that they found was that there was an increase in tyrosine. Tyrosine is an amino acid found in most proteins. It's a precursor to the amines, which are a group of neurotransmitters that include and norepinephrine, epinephrine. People will be familiar also with dopamine. So interesting. They didn't do any further work on this yet. Still burgeoning area. There was a response to this paper more recently by Charles Raisin and David Ricklin, and I'll include the citation for that. And they were talking about how maybe, this is just, like, an interesting little tidbit, little fun thing for people to think about. Maybe back in the cave days, protein-rich meals, which were, you know, they required a kill, they required people to work together for that kill. Maybe they also increased the opportunity for food sharing. and therefore minimized conflict inherently. That might have afforded some sort of like survival adaptation for people, as opposed to carbohydrate rich meals, which I guess were competed for more regularly. So there's this idea that there's like protein mediated social tolerance, or carbohydrate mediated social punishment. So both of which might be adaptive under certain circumstances. So they were kind of trying to guess why eating protein might make you basically nicer, because evolutionarily protein was this thing that we had to share and that was hard to come by and had to make everybody come together. Anyway, it sounds totally alien and like wacky, but I just thought it was an interesting thing. This stuff is published in like good journals. So really? As I was reading, wow. I was like, okay, like these people are experts in their field. And I just thought it was interesting. I'm not saying people should eat protein to be nice and eat carbs to be mean, because I don't think that's not how that works. And I don't think this is what these people are saying either. But it was just interesting. It was something that I think would be on like PBS. Mm-hmm. So I thought I would share it just as an interesting little tidbit.
Love it. I appreciate the share.
Protein mediated social tolerance. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. That's all I have.
Love it. Don't love eat like a bear.
No, hate it.
Hate it. Thumbs down.
Is there something that you do love, Hannah? Has something been tasty for you this week?
Yeah, actually, Pat and on the weekend, we created our own, we didn't really create it, we ordered food, but we created our own little Cineplex movie night at home.
Oh, because that's so nice.
We enjoy going to the movies. We don't go often. We obviously haven't gone in the last year. But at least where we live, Cineplex, the movie theater, is on Skip the Dishes. So you can order like whatever food from the movie theater that you want. So
okay.
I love good, buttery, salty movie theater popcorn.
Movie theater popcorn.
So good. Mm-hmm. Some people might feel different. Like I was talking to my mom about it and she was like, bleh. She literally went, bleh. Like she was like, I don't like movie theater popcorn. I'm curious to hear how bleh sounds on the podcast.
It sounds good
on my
earphones.
But anyways, I don't know if you saw it, but I posted on Instagram. It's a whole story. Did you see it yesterday?
No, I didn't see the story.
Okay, no,
I saw the post.
You did see the post,
but not in your stories.
No, I meant like I posted.
Oh,
on Instagram.
You wrote in the okay. Yeah,
there you go. Yeah, not Instagram stories. Like I shared the story. Basically. You know, movie theater popcorn was once this. I feel like we don't talk about our experiences with food as much anymore. We really
nostalgic
did in
experiences.
The first.
Yeah.
Well, even right. our own personal histories and like relationships with food. It's not something
we should have an episode.
We should. Mm-hmm. But anyways, when I was in my late teens, early 20s, I still had a really disordered relationship with food, and I came across this article that was like, and I've seen several articles like that. Over the years, but it was basically like, you know, 10 things that registered dietitians refuse to eat or something like that, or won't eat or never eat or whatever. And I was studying to be a dietitian at that time, and I had a really bad relationship with food and some disordered habits. And my computer just went dark. And I saw that, and one of the foods on the list was movie theater popcorn.
Good old movie theater.
And it was
popcorn.
Like, obviously, you know, something about the sodium and the fat.
It'll
and,
kill you.
You know, the artificial butter or whatever. Yeah. And I was like, oh God, like, so it just became a really big, like, quote, like fear food for me. It was something that I was like, I felt like I shouldn't have never touched because dietitians don't eat that. And like, I wanted to be a dietitian and I was super impressionable. And if I did eat movie theater popcorn, it would turn into like one of those like binge restrict kind of cycles. It was sure, like, yeah, if yeah. I had a handful.
Oh, I can't eat
yeah,
tomorrow.
If I had a yeah, handful yeah. of popcorn, it would turn into like, well, I might as well eat the whole bag, like way past fullness, feel disgusting, yeah, yeah. and then like restrict my food tomorrow because I feel like shit. And it was just that whole cycle.
You're making me remember stuff that actually would we could talk about.
Yeah,
this in a
we
whole
should.
Episode.
But anyways, my tasty this week is movie theater popcorn because, you know, after years of working on my relationship with food and learning about, you know, how disordered that was and how harmful messages like that, you know, 10 foods that so-and-so, whether it's a celebrity or a healthcare professional or whatever, that they won't eat can be problematic because there really doesn't have to be one food that you don't eat because it's so unhealthy, you know, like right. I think everything can fit to some capacity. Obviously yeah. some things more often than others, but anyways, I enjoyed my movie theater popcorn with, you know, that at the movie theater, so you can get those like flavor packets to go on your popcorn. Mm-hmm. We had those, yeah, yeah. we had our movie theater popcorn. We watched a movie at home. It was lovely. So that was my tasty this week.
I love that.
Thank you. So what about you?
I miss the good old days when you could push the button.
For the butter?
And like, because now, don't you have to pay for it? You prepay for it and then they shake it up
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, they
in the
put
bag.
Butter. Yeah, there was like different options on Skip the Dishes.
I need to control.
They were like butter on top.
I want to get my money's worth of butter.
You have to wait
butter.
Though.
It's not butter.
These were the options. It was like butter on top of the popcorn.
Oh, or mixed in.
Or no, butter on top and in the middle.
Yeah.
Or no butter.
Yeah.
Those were your options.
No. I don't, yeah, I need to do it myself.
Did you ever see the people at the movie theaters who they take a straw, and they put it up to the butter
that
spout,
is,
and so that it goes
that
through
is
the
diagnosable.
Straw.
I was not that far. That diagnosable. If you were that kind of person, I need you to DM us and tell us why you did that.
Okay. So what about you? What's been tasty for you this week?
So what's been tasty for me this week? Again, I'm on this whole like quick meals kick. Mm-hmm. Quiche. Just like
love.
A bunch of eggs, throw in some vegetables, maybe another protein, cheese, whatever you want. A good way to get rid of like spinach before it goes bad. You just throw it in the oven for an hour, 350, live your life.
Do you make your own
cut
crust
it off
for
squares.
It?
Crustless just because I don't have time. Oh, but yeah, yeah. Maybe I could buy crust and make it in crust, but I've just been doing it in glass casserole pans, and I've been eating it like with bread, like as a sandwich, or ooh. Like on crackers, like or whatever.
I love that.
Yeah, with yogurt. Yeah,
it's like a frittata.
So that's been my tasting. It's like a frittata
without the pie
exactly.
crust. Yeah, it's like quiche without the pie yeah. crust is a frittata.
Exactly. I guess I'm making frittata.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I exactly. love quiche. I usually make it. I don't know. Maybe you can try this because you don't have time. But I use a frozen pie crust.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
I just
yeah.
Buy those
you're
at
right.
The store.
Yeah.
I know it's not like.
Yeah, yeah.
I should be making it at home, but
I'm not. I have no high horse to stand on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, I love that. I love quiche. I hate eat like a bear. And
hate eat like a bear.
I love all you listening. And
yeah,
make sure that you're following us on social media. Leave us a rating and a review. And yeah, I think that's just about everything.
If you're in the Hamilton or Guelph area, check out Tempo Chef VB mm-hmm. on Instagram. An incredible chef who delivers meals to you in this troubling time. Gourmet at a, I would say, affordable price.
Totally. Absolutely. Agree.
Shout out. Chef Victoria.
Yep. We love ya.
We love ya.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye.
I feel like, what were you going to say?
Bye, everyone. No, seriously, you guys, bye.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.